Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 276.
This week on the podcast, the government is now open, so it's time to re-record that White House voicemail.
And enjoy Tuesday's State of the Union address with a side of Watergate.
Plus, when will the world's richest people open their arms to Trump? Apparently not at Davos.
And as always, the best way to ensure having a sexual predator on your payroll is to employ a faith advisor.
Plus, Claire McCaskill looks to continue her run of being the luckiest Senate candidate in America.
And the Guggenheim sends the president their pièce de résistance, a golden toilet called America.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Guess how many people in Puerto Rico don't have any power?
500,000.
That's how many.
Yeah, I guessed right.
Brent got it.
Yes.
It was at least 500,000 more people than I wanted it to be.
That's right.
I mean, I guess you can guess one or two people here and there sometimes don't have power because of various electrical malfunctions.
Sure.
500,000 people, that's too many.
Yeah.
Let's get them some power, you guys.
Yep.
At this point, I understand. I've read a lot of articles about why this is taking so long, and yet I think I've come to the conclusion that I still don't understand why this is taking so long.
That's
only
exactly
because
what it is.
I know that this didn't have to take this long.
That's right.
And so every time an article explains why it's taken so long, I've been like, is this a real reason? I don't
right.
think
while
it
you,
is.
While you were explaining to me why it's taken this long, we should have fixed it.
Exactly. Right. Like, it seems like if 500,000 people in upstate New York had no power, we'd fix it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't
tomorrow
take
they would have
months.
Power.
Months. Yeah, right. They'd have power tomorrow. If they went the weekend without power, we'd be like, who let them wait a weekend?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes. Yeah. 500,000 people have probably lost and gained power in the United States multiple times since then.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
In any case. The government reopened on Monday.
It sure did.
Just when we dropped a podcast saying it wasn't open.
Right, exactly.
It was, as we talked
but
a little
had a
bit.
Very, we had a debate on the podcast last week, and I feel like we're kind of still having the same debate, which is exciting.
Yeah, that's true. We still aren't really agreed on the strategy.
No. But
so
we'll catch you up.
We'll catch you up, yeah. By the way, before we begin to go into the details, this is our fourth temporary budget resolution. I want to remind everyone, we've never had a budget. Anyone who's trying to claim that it's
we're not doing
or
that.
We all of a sudden didn't have a budget is lying to you because we haven't had a budget this whole time.
That's right.
We just have been passing continuing resolutions.
Right. And so, both Republicans and Democrats are not happy about that.
Yes,
scenario,
exactly.
By the way.
And
yeah.
And we could keep doing that forever if
sure.
they continue to not play ball. So there is
right.
some reason to play ball, I think.
Sure.
In any case.
Yeah.
So what happened was, finally, the Democratic leadership did not get any sort of dream-related funding into
they did
the
not.
Bill. However, they got a promise from Mitch McConnell that he
sure.
would bring
noted,
up...
Noted promise keeper,
noted, noted non-liar Mitch McConnell.
Right. Yeah.
Promised he would bring immigration up for a full discussion and vote before February 8th, before
right.
they pass...
Before, which is when this last two.
Right,
this
before
budget,
this bill expires
right,
and they
right,
have to
yeah.
vote on a new budget.
Right.
Now, a lot of Democrats were like, I don't trust him. A lot of other
shocking.
Democrats were like, let's trust everyone. When has this ever gone wrong before?
Right, exactly.
So there were some notable holdouts in voting for the bill. Liz Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, all
yeah,
of them
it was
voted
the,
against.
It was the 18 Democratic senators who were running for president in 2020.
Yeah, they were all like, I'm not going to look like the fool that voted for this bill.
And if you think I'm kidding about how many
we'll
of them
getting
there
to
might
that later.
Be, we're
He's not. Dianne Feinstein said that she was disappointed in the deal because there was no guarantee, but then obviously she voted,
she voted
for it.
And she voted for it. That's
classic move of
like
hers.
If that sentence that you just stated right there is on her tombstone.
Yeah, exactly. She voted
right.
for it anyway.
Right, exactly.
Dianne Feinstein. Year rest, Dianne Feinstein. She voted for it anyway. So we have until February 8th to work this out. The bill passed. There were 18 holdouts in...
Yeah.
In the Senate and
yeah.
150 in the House. Trump made a jab at Democrats, blaming them for it as he signed it, as
obviously.
You would expect.
Yes.
I think Luis Gutierrez, who is a Democratic congressman, kind of sums it up best for me. He said of the Senate leadership, and this is where Brent and I are going to disagree. He said, they caved, they blinked. That's what they do. Democrats caved was literally trending on
it
Twitter
was.
Monday night.
Yeah.
A lot of Democratic groups... Indivisible, groups like that who are kind of in the world of Democrats but not necessarily associated with the Democrats, were pissed.
Yeah.
Because Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump have lied to us before about this.
Correct.
And they lied to us again about it. We're going to get to how they lied again.
Yeah.
Brent and I have slightly different takes on whether this was a strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I might be giving them a little bit too much credit for foresight.
Yes.
But, I did say to you earlier, and I stand by this, and now I will say it publicly.
Oh, good.
I guess this is publicly.
Yeah, sure.
If they shut down the government on February 8th, which I think that they probably will because of what this immigration bill seems like it's shaping up to be, then I will definitely declare that they caved and will become as enraged as the rest
as
of
everyone.
Else. I think that they have been able to now sort of like, because of what's being floated by the White House for their immigration bill, now sort of like have the tools to frame it in a way that takes any blame that may have been on them from the last round completely off of them and is going to make it a little bit harder for the Republicans to sort of stand by this bill when it's going to just be an entire bill of something that 80% of the country has no desire for. And it's on paper and is coming out of the president's mouth.
And we should tell you what's in the presidential immigration deal, because this is relevant to this discussion.
Yes.
Basically, so Trump released a one-page immigration plan that the Senate is supposed to draft up themselves.
Right.
But the plan is basically, in exchange for a DREAM Act-style policy, he gets everything. They get they get $25 billion for crazy far-right-wing conspiracy theory-style border security, including the wall.
The wall that Mexico was supposed to be paying for.
Remember when we weren't paying for the wall because Mexico was paying for it?
Yeah.
Turns out we're paying for the wall.
Yeah, that's right.
But so in any case, so this has really split, not really split, but it's split him from everyone because everyone's mad about something in this bill.
Right.
And he's on the other side of it wondering why everyone's
mad. Yeah, because even the far-right crazy folk are like,
they're mad because it has a path to citizenship for Dreamers.
It has a DREAM Act in here. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And the people on the left, or the middle left even, are kind of like, fuck you, guy.
Or middle right.
Right. We're not going to pay for this fucking wall.
Yeah.
And also, there's a lot of people. There's a lot, you know, there's a gang of 20 in the Senate. There's always a gang of a certain number of people working on immigration.
Yeah. By the way, Marco Rubio is not playing the
game anymore.
Yeah.
It did him wrong. I can understand why he stepped away from the gang.
Sure.
He's in rehab for his gang membership, rehab. But the gangs are angry because this is so much more money than they were talking about in as a sort of middle ground compromise that this kind of throws their conversation out. You know, it's like sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, exactly. It basically sort of like now the White House has a stance and it sort of like flies in the face of everything that everybody
logic
in the Senate was, logic and reason, and also what they all thought that they might be able to accomplish in a bipartisan way that would be able to get passed in both chambers.
And here is where, so the reason that I don't agree that waiting for this to happen was a smart strategy is because I think that they will cave again and this will be the time. Like, Democrats are already angry at them for caving the first time because we were already with them.
Yeah.
If they cave on this, they have to hold.
Oh,
the
line.
Oh
yeah, no,
on
I
this,
don't think they can. I agree.
They are done for, and
I
don't
agree.
Think they will. Because can you tell me one time in the past where they've held the line on anything? Can you name one example of them doing that in history?
And that, when you said that to me earlier today, I was like, "Well, she brings up a good point."
I just feel like because Donald Trump has given us specific promises to pass a DREAM Act and taken them away twice now, we are already into the area where I'm kind of like, stop falling for the shit.
Yeah.
You fell for it. Like, the reason I didn't trust McConnell was because they've given us specific reasons not to more than once at this point. It's like, at a certain point, you have to stop being a fool. It's like, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me three times, shame on everyone.
Right. I totally agree with you. I just feel like they now have some better tools to frame it in a way that is going to be, I think, more palatable, like broadly to the country
and
to
I
thought they had it the last time too, but I feel more so like they have it now.
But they
can't keep doing that and then just thinking every time the next time they have something more, is your point.
I feel like I have reached my threshold of them having the argument. They had the argument for me last time. I was ready for them to shut the government down for good, for all I cared, because I was so sick of this bullshit.
Right. Totally.
And for them to reopen it only to have the Republicans go back on the promise that they were actually going to negotiate in good faith on immigration immediately. I mean, this happened the day they, this basically was released the day
that they announced it. Yeah, it was like later in the week. Yeah,
That to me was just sort of like, oh, okay, now we're just shooming around. This is just shooming. This is not policy anymore.
Yeah.
And so I'm ready for them to shut that mother down.
Well, I think they probably will.
I think they're not going to.
Oh, you don't think they're going to shut it down?
I don't think Schumer has the balls for this. Oh. This is his decision ultimately. Like, I know there's all these people now in Senate leadership, but ultimately he's the guy that's going to make this decision. He does not have the balls for playing hardball. He, like Trump, believes himself to be a master negotiator because he's terrible at negotiating and he gives everything away and then people take the deal because it's such a good deal for them.
Yeah.
Like, this is... he's Clintoning around there, being like, we'll give you everything, and then we'll make a deal and look like heroes.
Right.
He doesn't have the guts. Like, Bernie Sanders has the guts for this, you know?
Sure.
He'll do a filibuster by himself. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think a lot of these people who are... It's telling when all the people who are running for president won't vote for something. That means it's not a good idea.
Right.
Generally.
Exactly.
If it's something you have to worry about having had on your record, and everyone who's thinking about running for president is worrying the same thing...
Right. That means it's not going to play well in a primary. Which, and guess what, guys?
That's the only reason you're doing this.
Those are your voters.
Exactly.
People who are voting in a primary.
Exactly. So I'm a little bit worried that he doesn't have the balls to carry through on that threat. And now they've really backed themselves into a corner where they have to shut down the government.
They do.
There is nothing else that they can do.
I think they intend to, actually.
I'm sure they intend to for 12 to 24 hours.
Fair enough.
And I'm sure they intend to be if they are people who could fall for Donald Trump's line on supporting the Dreamers twice, then they are people who could fall for this bullshit twice.
Right.
They could fall for it any number of times.
Yeah.
Because there's not one example of them not falling for it in history.
I know.
In any case, the White House voicemail, there was a little bit of a scandal because they changed the White House voicemail during the shutdown to blame the Democrats. They literally had it say, unfortunately, we cannot answer your call today because congressional Democrats are holding government funding, including funding for our troops and other national security priorities, hostage to an unrelated immigration debate. Due to this obstruction, the government is shut down. Come on. First of all, is this even legal to, like, release a political message like this, like a partisan political message like this on the government phone lines, and also to you can't shut down the comment line.
I mean, we're in the sequel to Watergate right now.
That's
so
true.
Like, they're not really caring about rules.
What's legality?
Right now.
what does legality mean?
Yeah.
In any case, this immigration deal, just to follow up on who is for and against it, has everyone against it. But notably, the only two people that are for it are David Perdue and Tom Cotton, which is not who you want as your duo.
No,
they're not a convincing duo, but like literally like the House, most of the members of the House Freedom Caucus, all the conservative groups in America are all angry about it because it is a path to citizenship bill.
Right.
All the Democratic groups are like, fuck you guys. Why would we give you all of this? This makes no sense. And have been like, why are you holding these people hostage?
I was going to say, I feel like we're really sort of like starting to, I mean, I have always known why getting immigration done is hard. Like, this was why... when it didn't get done in 2013, like,
it was
hard. When it was hard. It's always been hard, but it's like when you sort of like see what like the main things that the both sides want are, it's like, it's just trigger words. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's like the wall is a trigger word. Amnesty is a trigger word. It's like
there's no conversation.
Right, exactly. So
it's hard to get a deal done when nobody wants to get a deal done.
That's right.
Because everyone is angry about every word being included.
Right.
All the words that describe immigration are trigger words.
I know.
So there's no way for them to write policy that doesn't include some of them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And who are all these people there are all these groups that are trying to get lower immigration numbers.
Yeah.
Like, whose life is devoted to lowering the immigration rate?
Yeah, that's the other thing that is in this sort of, like, one-page document that was probably written by Stephen Miller.
Who's not a writer, you guys.
No,
he's also written the State of the Union speech.
Either.
It's
not a writer.
Concerning.
Yeah. But it has, you know, it reduces legal immigration. It, like, ends the... like the visa,
for families, people to join their families. Uh-huh, yeah.
Yep.
What do they call that? Chain immigration?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So like it's,
but that's a trigger word. So
another trigger word.
Use that carefully.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's got a, besides the money in there, it's got a lot of other, like, it's not a good deal for
people,
the Democrats, even if they get DACA out of it.
The heads of a lot of groups that represent Dreamers, and all of them were against it because they were like, it's not
worth... because they're basically using us to sort of like sell out all other immigrants.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, they don't want that on them either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, so...
And you're, like, holding them hostage to get these changes is not acceptable. In any case, this has created an exciting backdrop for the State of the Union, which is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Western Pacific.
West
I was going to say Central, and then I was like, that's not Central. It's probably 9-8 Central, as they would say it.
On a TV commercial.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But so tune into that. A, because it makes for a great drinking game if you're into that. And B, because it's really important to the future of the nation.
Right.
And
C, because who knows what Donald Trump is ever going to say.
Well, exactly. They claim that they're going to set aside their more their combative tone and embrace compromise and try to make an appeal beyond his base.
Mm.
Now, listen, he is kind of a sociopath, and I believe that he can deliver a speech that does this. He did that when he made that joint address to Congress, though, and that didn't go anywhere. Like, you can deliver a speech that says anything.
Sure, that you didn't write.
You didn't
write. Being a functional illiterate.
Right. You certainly, you barely could read.
Right, exactly.
But so, they're gonna talk about a few major things.
Sure.
One, the tax overhaul, the economy.
Yes.
Something he's very familiar with, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Infrastructure, immigration, trade, and terrorism, and North Korea, basically. They say
global threats, but they mean North Korea.
Mm-hmm. But so, he's gonna try to make the case, as you do in any State of the Union, that everyone has benefited from his policies.
That's
but he has some things working against him.
Sure.
One being that he has the lowest approval rating of any president in his first year. And two being that he has the least number of legislative accomplishments to point to.
He hasn't done anything.
He hasn't done anything and everyone
hates him.
Right. So
there you go.
That's going to be a unique challenge for him.
Sure.
He's going to try to sell us on the idea that the tax cuts aren't total shit.
Which he's going to...
Don't buy it.
I was going to say.
What's he going to say?
Is it one year you're going to get a minor tax decrease? Is it a State of the Union address, like, mixed with some brand of sorcery or something? I mean, like, there's...
He's not going to... I mean, if he's only speaking to the rich, sort of wink-wink, maybe he will be able to make that argument. But he's not going to be able to make it to us.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about his infrastructure plan, which is never going to happen, so just ignore it. He's going to talk about immigration and his new proposal, which everyone on every side of the aisle hates. He's going to talk about trade... he's now into this idea, he talked about this in Switzerland, of doing one-on-one deals instead of multilateral agreements.
Sure.
Now, here's something I'm going to say. There's a reason we do multilateral agreements, and it's because there's a lot of countries, and it's easier.
Sure.
And sometimes you just want to have the same agreement with multiple countries, because you don't have time for the bullshit.
Yep.
Good luck to him trying to make one-on-one deals,
yep.
but one-on-one deals is going to be real complicated, and they just don't have the manpower to deal with that. They have no expertise.
No,
he doesn't know anything
about
trade other than that he gets his shit manufactured in China.
No.
So... I don't know who's going to be there delving into the trade peculiarities of France to tell them that they need a different deal than Germany, but it's not going to be someone in the Trump administration.
Well, he's like, this is one of the things that, like, he is sort of like, he's probably knows the next amount of things about trade next to maybe immigration or maybe infrastructure, because that's like building
buzzwords,
things, but
for
he knows
sure.
buzzwords, and that's the thing. Like, he sort of like, he... like so many people in the GOP sort of like can have a thought that like at its base level, like maybe has some sense in it. Like one of the stories that we actually don't have a ton of facts on because we didn't pull a story for it this week, but there was the thing where he like impose tariffs on some of the stuff coming in from China. And nobody actually, people were mad because it was solar panels. So it made it seem like he was like trying to like
stop
end
solar panels. Yeah.
But like, a lot of people sort of were like, well, that is actually, he's not wrong about sort of like the reason that he did that. But it's like, he didn't go through, he should have gone through the WTO. He should have got, you know, like there were other ways to do that. Go to like China directly and like try and actually get sort of like that disparity figured out and like how we could maybe be like, you know, there was just sort of like,
diplomacy is not his area of expertise.
Exactly. Right. So he sort of like he had the right, like, general thought.
Concern.
Right.
He had the right concern, but not
actually
the right general thought.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I think, what we're going to see from him regardless on every issue, because that's...
One, a lot of issues he doesn't have the right...
Right, concern.
concern.
Right. That's true.
Either, but yes.
But on trade in particular, he's always had the right concern, and that's part of why he created this populist appeal.
Yeah, of course,
appeal.
That's why he's president, one of the main
reasons.
He was the
anti-free trade candidate.
Yeah.
And the only, you know who, the other anti-free trade candidate was
Bernie Sanders,
you know?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
And so there's an aspect of trade that he is sort of like a compelling
right.
figure on.
That he gets but doesn't get.
But he doesn't get why he gets it.
Right.
Why That's he it. Doesn't get
there
it.
It is.
He doesn't get yes. why he gets uh-huh. what he doesn't get. In yep. any case, he's also going to talk about terrorism, obviously, to scare us. And then he's sure. going to talk about North Korea. But they promised he wouldn't say things like Little Rocket Man and Fire and Fury.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can trust that promise, but we'll see. And then, obviously, one of his guests is going to be someone who has lost someone in the opioid crisis. I would guess all of sure. them are going to be, because it's going to be like coal miners that are out of work.
Sure.
And then, like, people who have yeah. died in the opioid crisis.
Right.
Or family members.
Killed by an immigrant.
Or killed by an immigrant. He did that the last one. And
I know,
I was like,
why not?
These are all the people in America like, who like, have anyone who's been killed by an immigrant, because you can't find that many of them.
Who's to say he won't rehash that?
That's true. They might come back.
Storyline.
The speech was written by Stephen Miller, so it's not going to be any sort of wonderful piece
and,
of oratory.
You know, we talk about Stephen Miller on here sometimes. I think we quoted Lindsey Graham saying something about, like, how Stephen Miller was, like, not to be yeah. trusted on, like, doing anything. If you have any free time in your day, find an interview with Stephen Miller.
Yeah.
The man is a real-life idiot.
And according to Fire and Fury, not as literate as someone who's writing all the president's speeches should be.
Yeah. Well, that's not shocking to me as a person yeah. who has heard him
be
speak.
Interviewed, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
he doesn't
not
have...
he's not a genius.
He doesn't... No, he's not a genius. He's not... No, he's not even close.
He's... I think actually, I had a personal theory that one of the reasons Steve Bannon agreed to do so much interviewing for Fire and Fury was
yeah.
because he would often get clumped in with Stephen Miller, and he wanted to, like, make the case that he was the genius and that
he
Stephen
Miller...
Yeah, he's the intellectual yeah. in that situation, and Stephen Miller is, like, the lunatic idiot.
Yeah.
And I feel like he did successfully separate himself from Stephen Miller. They both have the same apocalyptic worldview.
Yeah.
But Stephen Miller is like a dumber Steve Bannon.
That's right.
Which in some ways makes him more charming because it seems like you can do less damage that way.
Right.
But in other ways, it makes me concerned because he's currently writing presidents,
yeah.
the president's speeches and in
yeah.
charge of a lot of policy
yeah,
areas that I don't feel comfortable with. So yeah. it's a terrible situation all around.
Yeah.
Here's a good situation, though. So we found out
yeah.
who's going to deliver the official Democratic Party
yeah.
response. It's Joseph Kennedy. He's a congressman from Massachusetts.
Yes. 2020.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
That's another one. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and that's always what we're doing with these
yeah.
responses.
Yeah.
But something magical is happening outside of the Joseph Kennedy experiment.
Perhaps the most magical thing.
Which is,
one can imagine.
Well, and it's, he's the third Joe Kennedy, obviously,
because
there's
yeah.
been a lot.
yeah.
Maxine Waters is providing her own nationally televised State of the Union
that's
response
right.
on BET.
Yes.
She's going to be on Angela Rye's State of the Union.
Right. Also, Angela Rye is an American treasure.
Yeah.
By the way. Anyway,
doing
so
it.
Is Maxine Waters. So
right. This is
might,
a,
the
this
world
is a,
might just implode on itself.
It's like a real super team over
yeah.
here.
Uh-huh.
But so I couldn't be more excited about this.
That's going to be great.
I mean, that's... And if Donald Trump has given us anything, it's the ability to have someone like Maxine Waters deliver her own independent response
that's
to
right.
the State of the Union.
Also, Maxine Waters, 2020.
20, why not?
Why not?
She's in her 70s, but...
Right?
So is Trump.
So is Bernie Sanders.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In any case, this was an exciting week for scandals. A lot
really
of scandals broke this week.
Right.
The biggest one was that we found out that Trump had tried to fire Mueller over the summer because
yeah.
he because that was when the news was
yeah.
ramping up
because
that
of
they
golf
were going
to
yeah because they were the news was the news had been ramping up that they were going to be investigating a possible obstruction case. And
right.
so he suddenly was like, why do I hate Mueller? I've got to come up with reasons that he can't be the investigator anymore.
Yeah.
So, he came up with three of them.
Yep.
All of them are dumb. The first
right.
was that about or like years ago, the Mueller had belonged to the Trump National Golf Resort
mm-hmm.
in Virginia,
yeah,
in Sterling, Virginia, which I think is outside D.C. And he had been the FBI director at the time and
yeah.
resigned his membership over a dispute having to do with the fees. So Trump obviously was like, well, he hates me because
right.
he had to resign his membership over.
Yeah.
And I bet a lot of people have fee disputes with the Trump organization.
Probably.
He claimed that Mueller couldn't be impartial because he had worked for a law firm that had at one time represented Jared Kushner. That makes it sound like
that,
maybe
that
he would
be
too
in,
partial
I was
going to
say, right? Impartial
and then,
in the, yeah, partial in the wrong
he
way.
He had also been interviewed to return as the FBI director the day before he was appointed special counsel in May. So apparently, I don't know why that would be a conflict of interest.
No.
It was like a job interview that he
no.
didn't get and he got a different job.
Well,
like,
this is what happened
that
when
happens
you
all the time.
Leave the president to think of ideas to
yeah,
fire someone.
True. But in any case, so he told Don McGahn, the senior counsel at the White House,
yeah.
to fire Mueller. And McGahn was like, no, I'm going to quit.
right.
And then he was like, never mind.
yeah.
He just didn't follow through
that.
With it. Yeah.
yeah.
This was at the time. So Don McGahn is a Republican, a campaign finance lawyer
yeah.
who has been on the FEC.
Yeah.
He's like someone who actually knows about D.C.
Yeah.
But at the time, Trump's legal team was largely being influenced by his personal lawyer, Mark
sure.
Kasowitz, who knows nothing about politics. Right. And at the time, they'd been taking a really adversarial approach to the Russian investigation. Yeah. And so Trump was getting worked up.
Probably knows a lot about bankruptcy. Well,
yeah, I bet. I would guess. Uh-huh. So at the time, his legal team had been digging into conflict of interest issues for Mueller. Mm-hmm. And at the and media started reporting that some of his prosecutors, Mueller's prosecutors, had donated to Democrats. And that made them all lose their minds because they thought, first of all, Mueller's not
allowed. There's also this ridiculous text story that everybody is like, we're not even giving that the
the time
one
of day
breath of
But Mueller's not allowed to consider political affiliations when he hires prosecutors, so he could not have legally considered any of these things anyway. But they tried to frame it like they were hiring a team of Democrats to take down Trump. But
well, so, you know what? When you were, and this is the thing that I have said on so many times, is that when you are looking for a bunch of people who have either worked in the FBI or worked in the CIA or worked in whatever sort of division of this type of law enforcement, and you have a president who spent an entire campaign running basically on the basis of how inept and corrupt and awful they were, you are probably going to be finding people to hire who may have voted for the person that he was running against.
So true. It's going to be hard to find a lot of prosecutors that voted for Trump.
That's it.
It just doesn't.
That's life.
That's life.
That's how things work.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
When you go around disparaging an entire group of people, they maybe didn't vote for you.
Well, they didn't hire Chris Christie. They could have hired Chris Christie.
Yeah.
They could have hired Giuliani. Yeah. Think of all the people they could have hired.
That's it. We just thought of all of them.
We thought of all of them. But and Trump also thought about maybe firing Rod Rosenstein, who is overseeing the investigation as well. There's a problem with that, though, because if he digs deep enough into justice, he's going to find lifers.
Yeah.
And at the point that he's with the lifers, they hate him because he's been destroying bureaucracies left and right.
Yeah.
And they are the bureaucracy.
That's right.
They're like, they're people that work for every administration, Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
And they're not trying to deal with this bullshit.
No.
So the deeper he gets, the more he's, even if he gets below the Obama level appointments, he's going to just find an angry core of people. Like, he can only go so low.
Yeah.
But in any case, he's hired a new lawyer who's much more Washington savvy, and he's since really ratcheted back his criticisms because they've been like, listen, the number one way to be suspicious is to complain about the investigation.
Yeah.
So they've been trying to be like, don't do anything.
But also the only reason that you complain about the investigation is if you have something to hide.
Exactly. Yeah. It's... he's angry because it's giving him bad press, and he just wants good press, Brent.
Well,
he just wants to be loved.
If he / everyone in his administration wasn't leaking it,
then we wouldn't have anything to investigate.
Yeah.
But so in any case, this is like one of those stories, though, where we sort of, I think, instinctively knew that he was gonna fire Mueller because he says it all the time, and he's angry at Jeff Sessions because he only appointed Jeff Sessions to oversee this investigation, and he recused himself and all this stuff. But I feel like this is just like a when will he blow situation.
Yeah.
And when he blows, it's going to be Watergate.
Yeah,
so
right. Yeah.
When he blows, I'm hoping he doesn't.
Yeah.
But I'm also interested to see what will happen.
Same.
And this week was, or last week was the week that Slow Burn released their episode about the Saturday Night Massacre.
Mm.
And it was fascinating and also an interesting blueprint of what could go down should everything start to go down.
Nice.
So while the nation panicked over that news, Trump was at Davos claiming that this Mueller story was fake news.
Fake news.
Typical New York Times fake stories.
That's right.
And then also managed to get booed while he was
He got booed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was doing a Q&A with the founder of the Davos Forum.
It's so sad because this is the group.
This is the
first time. The U.S. president doesn't go to Davos.
No. It's just a group of rich people who are hobnobbing with other rich people.
And that's right. He claimed that he went there to go sell America first to everyone, which is like, also like, you don't sell that
to the
people from
people
around
the world. No.
Like, that's not what you go to.
No.
You don't sell.
Right.
Like, my country is like, you know, disconnecting from all of you people, but I'm here to tell you about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's, anyway, he went there because
he wants to be loved by these people.
Yes. It was all of the people who he's just dying to be friends with, and then he got booed. Can you imagine?
I know. It's tragic.
It's been so sad for him.
I know. It's because he made a comment about the fake media.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It was apparently even the rich people at Davos, probably many of whom are media magnates, were like, fuck you, guy.
Yeah,
media's
exactly.
Media's
that's
real.
Yeah.
He also, though, while they're talked about how the being a businessman had best had well, the best thing that he ever did to prepare for the job was be a businessman, and how he's the first businessman ever to be elected president. False. I call bullshit on that.
Fake news.
He is the first person with no political experience and only who business experience.
From business to presidency.
From business to president. Plenty of presidents have had business experience.
Of course.
But none of them have only had business experience. That's right. And that's where he's different.
Yes.
He also hilariously, and this is a quote, said, "I've always loved business. I've always been good at building things, and I've always been successful at making money."
That's right.
Says a man who's been bankrupt 6 times.
Yeah.
And then he complained that he was often treated well by the media when he was a New York developer, but now he just can't fucking get a break.
Yeah, that's right.
But so, in any case, even the ultra-wealthy and ultra-elite at Davos are not buying his fake news media bullshit.
Wah, wah.
So sad.
Yeah.
And then we also had a Clinton scandal this week.
Yeah.
And this is a real scandal. This isn't some bullshit scandal like she coughed and now she might have a brain tumor or whatever they're always going on about.
Yeah.
This is a legit scandal.
Yeah.
Because her faith advisor,
I mean,
don't have one of those, who she kept on the payroll for years,
yeah,
was accused of sexually harassing women.
Yes.
And they covered for him.
And they, yes. They reassigned the woman who put in the complaint. Her campaign manager at the time, Patty Solis Doyle, told Clinton that she should
remove this guy.
This guy.
It's Bern Strider is his name, by the way. Come on.
Yeah. And then she didn't. She reassigned the woman, and he later went on to work for Correct the Record, which is an independent group that was like basically that was supported by the Clinton campaign.
Right.
That was basically the group that like went around to like sort of tell the truth about all the lies that were being told about her, basically.
But this is in her 2016 presidential run.
Right. And the first one was in 2008, though.
Yeah.
So she basically rehired the guy or had him on the payroll the entire time. Who knows? And in 2016, he was actually fired this time for doing the same thing.
Yeah. This is a man who, as her faith advisor, called her every day with scripture.
That's right.
Here's the number one way to make sure that you're not hiring a sexual harasser is to not hire a faith advisor.
That's right.
If you have faith, good for you.
Yes.
Have it privately.
Yes.
If you practice your faith in a group where you're protected by other women.
Right.
And you can protect other women.
That's right.
From what is certainly a sexual harasser somewhere in the in the eaves.
That's right.
But
a faith leader who wants to also be working on a presidential campaign.
That's the kind of person.
That's not it.
Who's sexually harassing women. I don't know what to tell you.
There it is.
Every time, like, his job description is a wink-wink sexual harassment job. Like, that's like being the pastor in a megachurch.
Yeah, that's
if you,
that's what you
are
do.
The pastor in a megachurch, you're either harassing little boys or women.
I know, right?
I mean, that's what you're doing.
Like, we're getting to the point at this point, like, where that's going to be their legal defense.
Exactly.
Like, we're in so deep at
pastor.
This point. Like, what was I supposed to be doing? Not diddling the little boys? Like,
that was my job. That was in my job description.
God.
Yeah, the evangelical community has moved so far into the Trump apologism camp that this is now what evangelical Christianity is. But also, this is what it's always been. It's covering for disgusting middle-aged white men who are harassing women and little boys.
Right, and being paid by Hillary Clinton.
Middle-aged white men who don't harass little boys and women don't become these faith leaders.
No,
they do other things.
That's what they do.
Like, they could maybe consult on, like, gerrymandering or something. That's a job where you don't have to sexually harass anyone. In any case, another scandal.
Oh, God. Yeah. And
Steve Wynn.
Yeah. Also, here's...
What a surprise.
I was going to say, in addition to faith leaders and pastors at megachurches.
Yeah. Casino owners.
The other group of people is, casino owners.
Yeah.
Or people who have the face of Steve Wynn. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. Like, I'm not here to disparage anyone's looks, but I'm here to disparage Steve Wynn's looks.
Why not?
And, like, Steve Wynn is a person who is forcing women to have sex with him.
Yeah.
It's there. Like, you see a picture of Steve Wynn, and you're like, that's a guy.
That guy.
Who has probably raped somebody.
Yeah.
Inappropriately.
Had to step down this week from his post as the finance chairman of the RNC.
Sure.
Because a Wall Street Journal report alleged that for decades, he's been sexually harassing or assaulting women.
Yeah, that's right.
And that includes, there was, in 2005, he paid a $7.5 million settlement to a manicurist who said that she was raped by him.
Yeah. I would like to point out that $7.5 million number
to fucking Stormy
Daniels. If you're listening to this podcast, Stormy Daniels. That is more than, like, what did she get, like $12 or something?
Did she get like $130,000?
No, $7.5 million is the amount of money that you get.
That's what you ask for. Yeah. You don't, You ask for 10.
Yeah, so whoever this manicurist at the Wynn was...
had better lawyers than fucking Stormy Daniels.
Clearly, yeah.
So in any case, he's denying everything.
Yeah.
But since he's paid out settlements, I think we can rest assured that he's guilty.
Yeah.
Totally.
Trump, well, and they interviewed other people, too.
Right, yeah, that, she's
not alone.
This is a pattern of behavior.
Right. Yeah.
This is not just... But, by the way, show me a member of the RNC who doesn't have a pattern of behavior sexually harassing women.
That's right.
I mean, I would love to find one.
So would I.
I feel like that's... I feel like maybe Rens Priebus wasn't, just because I feel like he was kind of tragic.
Yeah.
And not... I don't even mean tragic, like, looks-wise. Like, he's kind of nerdy, but, like, I just mean, like, tragic...
Yeah.
Person-wise.
Like, tragic in the way that, like, he wouldn't even know how to go about it.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think he knows how to, like, coerce
which,
women into sex.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I guess.
Of all the people in the RNC, I'd maybe feel safest in a room with him.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to have to eat those words. I don't plan to be in a room with Rens Priebus anytime soon, but... No. But that's just my personal estimation based on body language and nothing else.
There's something to that.
Yeah. In any case, Trump, who has called Wynn a great friend as recently as 2016, hasn't commented yet. But on Friday, his Twitter account liked the Wall Street Journal article about the allegations. And then unliked it afterwards.
Unliked it.
So confusing.
Yeah.
Here's some good news. And also a scandal, if you have your heads on straight.
Okay.
82% of the money generated last year went to the richest
1%. 1%.
Globally. We're talking in the world.
Yes.
The poorest half saw no increase at all in their wealth, and 82% of the new wealth went to 1%.
1%.
That means that the remaining 16% of the wealth went to the
99.
Of other 50 of above percent.
Right. Guys.
This is not the world that we want to live in.
No, it's not. Also, 42 people. 42
individual people.
Individual humans.
Yes.
Yeah. Now own as much wealth as the poorest half.
Of the world.
50% of the, the world.
That's of right. 3.5 billion people.
Oh, we have way more than that.
Of 4 billion people.
We have more than that, I think, don't
How
we?
How many people are there?
And it's like going up like exponentially.
Oh.
Yeah.
Up 4 plus billion people.
Yeah, aren't we about to hit like 8 or something?
Well, then 4 is the 50%. 50%.
That right there is math.
That's right. That's 3.5 to 4 billion would be half of the world's population.
No, you know what? You were,
That's some mathematically sound thinking.
Nailed it. And really got that.
Those people have as much wealth as 42 individual people. Don't like that.
That is an unsustainable
amount
of income.
Is quality. This maybe a... Is democracy just failing? Like, can we just admit that, like, something has gone wrong with democracy?
Or did we... Right. Or did we have it?
Probably never. Yeah. But, I mean, like, we have spent... Democracy is a fairly new form of government. The New York Times just did a thing about this and about how... I mean, America's really the first wholly democratic society.
This whole thing is...
We spread it all over the world.
Yeah.
It's fucking failing us right now.
I was going to say... Well, and also, I mean, this is sort of like... Yeah, we're pushing it on everybody. And, like, in theory, maybe it's the way to go. But it's one of those things where, like, this is in the scope of how humans have been governing themselves. This democracy business
is
still an experiment.
Yeah. And I think because of that, we should be looking for ways to update and improve it. I'm not saying abandon democracy.
No,
I'm
not
saying
either.
Whatever we're doing right now, capitalism, democracy...
Sure.
They're not working right.
Allowing rich people to... be buying elections.
Exactly.
That's probably not going great.
No. It does, I mean,
it's not helping.
Hasn't been helping us certainly recently.
No.
It's certainly meant that multiple societies that at one point veered towards democracy have veered away from it.
Yep.
I'm talking about Russia, in case you needed me to name a country. Mm-hmm. And even to some degree, Venezuela. I mean, we were Hugo Chavez apologists for various reasons, but Hugo Chavez essentially became a dictator after being elected democratically and basically reigned took the reins of power away from the people once he was in power. That's what Putin has done.
Yeah.
Putin was democratically elected, and now he's not.
That's right.
Now he's a dictator.
Yeah.
So, in any case, just some thoughts about how we could improve this situation would be welcome.
Yeah, agreed. Speaking of dictators.
Jesus Christ.
The people at the DCCC, or the D-Trip.
The D-Trip.
They call it in the Beltway.
That's right.
Since that's where we reside. Are trying to ruin democratic primaries across this country everywhere.
That's this great world, great land of ours.
Yeah. But specifically, there's a great piece in The Intercept. It's long.
Yeah.
So give yourself some time with it. or read it in chunks so you don't throw your computer into traffic due to the rage level that you will get by the time that you're done with it if you read it in one sitting. Wrote a great story, and it sort of like starts specifically, and it uses this one primary that is happening right now in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, as sort of a, you know, microcosm of what's going on nationally right now. So there was this group, and we talked about it before, actually, because they sort of like came to sort of like national
attention.
They were having huge events. Right. It's a group called Lancaster Stands Up, and they sort of like formed to start having these town halls initially to about the Affordable Care Act when the Republicans were trying to take everybody's health care away from them. So
and they were getting huge numbers.
Right, they were getting huge numbers, and they were a group that hadn't existed before, and it was sort of like disparate, you know, groups that had never really like come together before. So like Democrats were like, yeah, this is great. It's like, you know, it's got people from the left, it's got people from the middle, it's got faith leaders, it's got, you know, grassroots people, it's got activists, it's got, you know, it's like a whole thing. A lot of new people coming into the fold. So it was like, we're doing it.
In the way that, like, in a lot of places, and probably in lots of Pennsylvania as well, the way that fracking and compressor stations have organized local groups to kind of have a goal. Right, like, that's what's happened in upstate New York, but it's also happened a lot in Pennsylvania. This sort of like a similar thing where an issue of national import but local specific interest caused a group to form that brought disparate groups of people together and started having really impressive turnout at their events, and because of that became quite effective.
Right, and so due to their effectiveness and also looking around the country and seeing what had happened in Virginia, what has happened in Alabama, and in various other places where Democrats have either flipped a district or have like had huge gains in a district, thought to themselves, hey, you know what? This congressional district, the Democrat only lost by 11 points in 2016. Maybe, just maybe, in 2018, we might be able to take this back from the Republicans here. So they, one of their own, Jess King, who heads a nonprofit that helps struggling women start up and run small businesses in the area. So she's like, obviously, like,
A do-gooder, and also like that
to me is like the type of sentence that you would think to yourself like, oh, that's somebody that like people are really going to be into.
And it
like,
also means she's somebody who is involved in the community.
In the community, exactly. Yes, decides to run against Lloyd Smucker, who's the Republican there. So they Lancaster Stands Up voted to endorse King, and so did a local immigration group, a big. The Justice Democrats did as well. And so she also had like some fairly decent like early fundraising, raised like $100,000. And so she was like, all right, well, I'm going to go out to sort of like the national groups and I'm going to get a hold of Emily's List because like I seem like the type of person that Emily's List could get behind. So Emily's List sends her a questionnaire. She fills it out and then it's radio silence from Emily's List. She tries to get a hold of them. Nothing, nothing, nothing from Emily's List. And the reason that Emily's List was not getting back to her was because they were busy thinking, or not thinking, along with the trip. About
Christina Hartman.
Now, Christina Hartman.
Tell me about Christina Hartman.
Christina Hartman is the candidate who ran against Lloyd Smucker in 2016.
And lost.
And lost.
By 11 points.
By 11 points.
And,
now.
And the interesting point about those 11 points.
That was way worse than Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump.
A notable number of people. Over 10,000 voters, 13,000 voters, went to the polls, voted for Hillary Clinton and Lloyd Smucker.
And Lloyd Smucker. That's correct.
That's a thing that happened there.
So, what in the actual hell is going on here?
This is what the DNC is doing.
The DNC
is significantly more interested in your fundraising prowess.
And that is what they, and so this is another example. This race right here really just sort of like reflects all of the things that is wrong with how we're picking our candidates right now. Because Christina Hartman raised more than anybody else had ever in that district before as a Democrat. She raised and she spent $1.5 million. She got 42.9% of the vote. Now, 2 years prior to that, in 2014, when the Democrats had their asses handed to them all over the country, that was a bad year. The Democrats spent $115,000. And got 42.2% of the vote. So she spent 10 times more than the guy did 2 years before her and got almost an identical amount of votes.
Turnout. Yeah. This is what the Democrats are doing. One of the things about being someone who can raise high dollar amounts is that you are often not someone who's involved in the community. You are someone involved with rich people.
Right. Rich people with Washington people.
Yeah.
When you go to Washington, apparently there's also a part of this article that I didn't pull all the details on. But basically, like, when you go as a candidate to after you've been elected, basically, like, there are expectations of you. And obviously, I get it. Like, we're still living in an age where you have to have some money to win an election. But, like, you're expected to spend, like, a certain amount of hours on the days or every day making phone calls to rich people who are, like, going to be able to give you money. And, like, the longer that you do that, the less you are involved in what's going on in your own district.
Yeah.
Well, so, and this is problematic.
The other thing that happens here, though, is that one of the ways in which these candidates are given the ability to do this fundraising is that they're given networking opportunities by the DCCC.
Right.
And so the DCCC invites these candidates, you know, in districts where they're support, you know, in districts like this Lancaster district where they're supporting candidates that are, you know, high dollar earners or whatever.
Right.
They invite them to Washington. They introduce them around town. They do all of these things for them to help them win these districts and meet people.
Yeah.
They don't do that for the candidates who are running out in left field by themselves.
Right.
And so those candidates aren't given the intros they need to raise the money anyway.
Right.
But
exactly.
This is not a viable fundraising strategy at this moment.
No.
Because a viable fundraising strategy, A, these districts are cheap. They're not this expensive.
No.
The most expensive districts in the country are districts in California where two Democrats are running against each other.
Right, exactly.
Those are the most expensive districts in the country. Yeah. All of these other districts, you don't need $1.5 million to win a district in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, clearly,
you can go to every town in that district in that time. I mean, these are not huge districts. Yeah. It is 700,000 people. That's a lot of people, but it's not a number of people where you can't make a personal intro to enough people that there are people in the district who can say, I met her and I trust her.
Yeah.
Like, there is just no use for that kind of money on this scale.
No.
On a statewide thing, you have to make media buys. That's why you need the millions.
Yeah.
You don't need that for congressional races. There's no media buys in these random rural districts for congressional races.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
But it also means...
Not expensive ones anyway. I mean, they're doing media buys, but they're not...
No,
you
but
know,
they're
you,
local
not
media
like,
buys.
I was going to say they're local media buys. Yeah, it's like not, they're not in the New York or Los Angeles media market.
No.
But anyway, so going back to Emily's list, they endorsed Hartman without a courtesy call to King. And the DCCC hosted a candidate week, like exactly like you were talking about, invited Hartman, did not invite King.
Right.
So
this is how the DCCC chooses candidates that are not necessarily the most well-grounded in the district to run over these fundraising concerns.
Yeah.
And then gives them all these opportunities, and they leave the, like, it's one thing if you want to invite every candidate who's polling above a certain amount to come to whatever, but if you're only going to invite your middle ground choice, who we have no reason to believe can win because she took $1.5 million last time and failed
to
win, then this is happening all over the country, but the idea of running, of preferring to run people who've already run and lost to new people.
Yeah.
If someone has already lost a seat and there is no new momentum in their case, don't fucking run them again.
Yeah, no.
They're losers.
No, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Tell
them,
no,
and if you want to help them out, help them get a smaller seat. Help them run for state senate or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, run for something else if you want to keep running.
Yeah, we don't have to tell Christina Hartman that she should, like...
She doesn't have to go die.
Exactly.
She can go run for the state assembly or something.
Yeah.
But...
She's not going to be their
representative.
She's not going to be Smucker.
No.
Again.
No.
Regardless of whether everybody hates Trump or not. It's like, that's just not her. That is not what her life is going
to be.
This
is a sign.
She's not going to be.
That everything that we feared about the DNC is coming to pass, where we feared that the DNC had not learned the lesson of running a really exciting and principled candidate.
Right. They're saying all the right things, but they're just not doing
the
right things.
They're not doing
the
right things.
Because they announced that when they were looking for candidates in 2018 that they were going to be focusing more on proof of grassroots and how involved they were previously in their community. And they basically, if they were doing any of the 100 things that they claimed that they were going to be doing on their candidate search for 2018, they would have already endorsed Jess King.
Yeah.
And they didn't. Also, I feel like this is how we know that they are totally screwing up, is that at this candidate forum that they had, They had it in the Wasserman room. Like, there, that's all you need to know.
We're Wassermanning.
That's it.
The Wasserman.
We now have all of the information
that we need.
We need about what the DCCC is doing once you're having a party in the Wasserman room.
Yeah. What they're doing is what they've always been doing.
That's right.
But these primaries are important.
Yes.
And respecting the primary process is important. That's something the DNC is not doing.
No.
It's the point of the primaries is to get the strongest candidate out of the primary.
Right.
I realize the Republicans are failing to do this, but that doesn't mean that our primaries are falling prey to the same problems.
No.
To equate grassroots candidates to Tea Party candidates is a bunch of bullshit.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, there are, people would say, like, oh, well, you know, you're going to nominate somebody who's, like, too far to the left. But, like, and Republicans do nominate people who are too far to the right. But there is an absolute difference in the sense that, like, if you nominate, say, someone like Todd Akin.
Right.
Like what happened in Missouri in 2012, he's a person who thinks that women can't get pregnant because of rape. If you nominate Jess King, she's a person who wants you to have free health care.
Well,
so there's another difference too. But
which
I mean,
is that someone who is involved in their community and has progressive views is not the same as somebody who is getting who is a salacious candidate, that's why they're Tea Party candidates raise money from national sources. They aren't raising local money.
Right.
Someone like Jess King is raising local money. So the equivalent situation for the Democrats is not, well, we have someone being funded by the ultra secret wealthy super far. There's no wealthy super far left donors out there who are secretly stealing the races.
Right.
What there is grassroots funding.
Yeah, exactly. But they also should be, they should not be afraid, especially in a district where you have a loser running, to try someone who maybe you might think initially to yourself is too far to the left. Because maybe they're the exact right amount to the left.
Also, you should not be afraid to support, to give both of them support in the primary.
Well, that's
and
the
find
thing.
Out
I just don't know why they just don't stay out of it.
Can
because
win.
there's 18 races that they have right now that they've like already dubbed red to blue seats that they're going to focus on. And in many of those 18, there are viable progressive candidates that they're trying to push out.
We're going to oss off our way into winning none of these seats.
Yeah.
And what we're not going to do, the reason that Doug Jones won is probably because they didn't think to get into it until it was super late in the game, like they were not tampering with that primary process. Certainly they were not tampering with anything until the general.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah.
They should stay out of the primary process because this is how we ended up with Hillary Clinton as a candidate.
That's right.
Is that all of these groups came in before the primaries were over. And that meant that the primaries weren't truly democratic.
Right.
And the primaries, especially in local races where someone's ability to resonate with local voters is important.
Yeah.
The primary should matter. They should be representative.
Yeah. But I think that this just sort of like, the reason that they are afraid of this is because they know that this is a really important primary season. And you can say that about any primary season, and I get that. But this is, first off, there is a real chance that, to believe that we could take back the House this time. And the candidates that you're going to run are going to define more broadly how you frame what you're running on in 2018.
Yeah.
And so the DCCC power players feel more comfortable running the sort of general boring people that they
always run. The people whose message they're used to hearing.
Right, because if they have a bunch of candidates all over the country who are like Jess King, they don't know what to do and that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But also, this is also important because 2018 is the last election that we're going to have before 2020. And that's huge because they are, there's 30 people going to be running for president probably.
Right.
And so Democrats sort of like, I think we really have to sort of like wrap our heads around this. And if you live in any of these districts where there is a progressive challenger, I like implore you to go do something for them, even if it's literally only, even if you like the other person.
Well,
it's just important to have the voices. And, like,
it's not doing us any good
to shut these voices down.
If you live in a district where there's, like, 1,000 of these little candidates that are, you know, running and don't have any support, and this is happening in my parents' district upstate. There's, like, 8 people running in the primary, and it's great, but they're waiting for the Democrats to come in and choose their candidate, basically.
Right.
And it's going to be someone completely different who hasn't been hitting, you know, they are doing forums where they're doing debates with these candidates already. Yeah. They're doing stuff to kind of create an awareness around these candidates so that they can kind of coalesce around somebody.
Yeah.
And it's important to go to those events and be aware of who those candidates are, because just because the Democrats didn't help a candidate become a household name in your district doesn't mean you can't do that.
Totally.
You know, you can make sure that people in your community are informed about lesser known candidates that really represent something valuable to the community. Right. And have a real grounding in the community.
Yeah.
And especially in a lot of these districts also, especially in swing districts, there's going to be an issue of carpetbagging going on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's a big issue in our district in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And so making sure that you help your local Democrats find a candidate who has some local grounding is going to be really important, I think.
Yeah.
There is never a safe time to run carpetbaggers. There are times that they win.
Yeah.
But there's never really a good time to be running carpetbaggers for election.
Yeah.
It's why Brent and I haven't moved to a random small town in Iowa to run for office.
For something, right?
You know, like, you should run in the district you live in and are connected to, and you should have a connection to people in that district to run.
Yeah.
And you can help your district find that person if you are paying attention right now.
Exactly.
In any case, it looks like, speaking of primaries, that Claire McCaskill might luck into a dream of a Republican primary. I mean, she's a Democrat, but she might be lucking into a Republican opposition again that is just like a total lunatic crazy person.
Yeah.
We mentioned Todd Akin just minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
And now Courtland Sykes, who's running in the Republican primary for the Missouri Senate,
bail her out again.
Has come to bail her out again.
Or maybe this is, you know what, I just had this idea. Maybe, because nobody knows who this guy is. We're going to get to that in a second.
Oh.
But, maybe this is, because you remember Claire McCaskill was like basically like paying for Todd Akin to win that primary.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Ooh, maybe she's...
Is this just the next iteration of Claire McCaskill's like evil secret genius?
You know
Did she invent Courtland Sykes? Claire McCaskill?
This is very Nixonian of her, if she did.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sort of fascinated by it. That's a conspiracy theory I'm 100% behind, by the way, and I'm going to continue to look into it.
Anyway, Courtland Sykes wrote sort of a
long-winded rant
piece.
Right.
Wrote it on Facebook, obviously, about women's rights.
Yeah.
Or the opposite of
the rights of nail-biting, man-phobic, hell-bent feminist she-devils.
Them. Yes. Yeah. Those guys.
The kind of people he expects a home-cooked dinner every night at 6.
Yeah, exactly. Sykes said he doesn't buy into radical feminism's crazed definition of modern womanhood and claimed feminists made it up to suit their own nasty, snake-filled heads. Yes.
Nasty, snake-filled heads.
Yeah, that's right. He said he wants his yet-to-be-born daughters to, quote, have their own intelligences and their own degrees so they can establish home-based enterprises.
Yeah, he doesn't want them to become, quote, career-obsessed banshees who forgo home life and children and the happiness of family to become nail-biting, man-phobic, hell-bent, feminist she-devils. This man loves an adjective, though.
Yeah,
he's not afraid of adjectives.
No, he's a real wordsmith.
It's a real wordsmith.
Yeah. He, but apparently there's a bit of a twist here, though. He's lived in Missouri for less than a year when he filed to become a candidate in September. This is per the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And his position paper on women's rights was part of an 11-page statement he sent to the newspaper last year. And they described him as a, quote, mystery candidate.
Yeah.
So literally nobody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he can't win a primary with stuff like this in Missouri, though.
Seems like there could really be an appealing...
If you're a nobody candidate and you live in Missouri, this is
who you
what
want.
You put on your Facebook if you're looking to win a primary and become the candidate for Senate in Missouri.
Yeah. This is, first of all, a dream scenario for Claire McCaskill, who seems to be somehow secretly conniving a way to get crazy candidates as her opposition in these races, because how is she winning that seat?
Right, exactly.
She's in a Republican state.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some magic to her. I hate her.
Sure.
But also, I think she's magical in a certain respect.
I agree, yeah. Yeah, because this will be her third term, right? Yeah, I believe.
But
Akin was not her first term.
No.
That was her re-election campaign.
That was her re-election campaign. She lucked into the seat at a time where there was like a Democratic sweep and has just been floating ever since.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But so in any case, the the GOP seems willing to run these kind of candidates.
Yeah,
so.
And that's, like, I want to quickly point it out, and we've talked about this on the podcast, but, like, there were a lot of people who were, like, sort of, you know, secretly or not so secretly upset about Steve Bannon's demise because they were, you know, sad. They were hoping that Steve Bannon was going to find a bunch of Roy Moores all across this great land to be running in GOP primaries, and then Democrats would be winning in everywhere, basically. Because right. If you can win in Alabama against Roy Moore, then you can win anywhere against Roy Moore, right. Basically. Republicans have been finding Roy Moore for decades without Steve Bannon.
Yeah, they don't need Steve Bannon to find idiots to run for office.
No.
Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch were in the same year.
Yeah.
We've had one of these candidates every single year.
That's right. Yeah. So
we still recall that legitimate rape was a word that was uttered before Steve Bannon entered our lexicon.
That's right. You know, Sharon Angle wanted to trade chickens for healthcare.
Exactly.
Long before Steve Bannon.
Christine O'Donnell was a witch.
That's right.
I mean, we've had these people nonstop for decades at this point. Yeah. We don't need Steve Bannon's help.
No.
There are lunatics
in
every state.
Missouri is like, covered. We've got it. Guys, don't worry about us.
I'm excited to see if this guy
sneaks
into the race.
Yeah, that's right.
And also, speaking of the 80,000 people that are planning to run for president,
Sanders
is convening some aides to decide if he wants to run again.
He hasn't decided yet, but he has.
He has, also. I'm sure. Well, this is the thing, though. I think if he runs all the time. If he runs, this would be a different, or he talks about running all the time.
Sure,
I mean, he doesn't run all the time, but he has threatened to run for president every presidential election that I can remember.
Sure.
If he runs this time, it's going to be a completely different situation because he will be the most high-profile candidate in the field. The one thing I will say, because I think he's too old.
Well, maybe not, but yeah.
He will be the most high-profile candidate in the field. He may not be the DNC choice in the field.
Sure.
He is the most high-profile member of the Senate. He is the most trusted member of the Senate.
He's not Oprah, though.
The most trusted politician in the country right now.
Yeah.
By literal fact, by polls.
Correct.
Show this. So even if he is not the most high profile in the sense of fundraising, in the sense of DNC support, he is the most high profile name to enter the race if he enters the race.
And it definitely
is a different situation for him to be in than he's used to.
Totally. And not only that is that, yes, he will be the highest profile, but he also is, you know, ultimately, he was only running against Clinton at the time. Now, granted, when he got in the race, Jim Webb was running, Martin O'Malley was running. Right.
Lincoln Chafee was running.
So there were people running. But, like, that was sort of, like, ultimately, it did not take long before that was a one-on-one race. I mean, it was long before Iowa ever even happened. It was
your one-on-one. What was the likelihood that he didn't go the way of Jim Webb? Like, that was, the fact that he didn't go the way of Jim Webb made him sort of a rock star.
Totally.
Because that's where these candidates normally go.
Yeah,
that's where a far-left candidate goes in a presidential race. Jim Webb was a far-right candidate. Lincoln Chafee's a Republican.
Right.
And Bernie Sanders is a socialist.
Right, exactly.
You would think that those three candidates would go the way of those three candidates. And Martin O'Malley, who's a boring Democrat who plays the guitar. Who's a governor.
Moderately handsome.
You know, Hillary Clinton, who's politically identical, but he was trying to at least claim that she was farther to the right, would run against each other, and you would be like, I don't care who these people win.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like it's like the John Kerry, Howard Dean genre of people.
Right.
This is a whole different scope of things because
it is.
To have the 74-year-old socialist be the most high-profile candidate, who'll be like 78 I mean, he'll be too old.
Yeah.
I almost don't think he should run because he will... I think we should stop setting a precedent of elderly people running for president.
Sure.
But it would be... It's a whole different thing than he's ever done.
And also, there are going to be people... It was fairly easy for him to out-left Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
It will be trickier to out-left Elizabeth Warren. Maybe.
Liz Warren, maybe. Everyone else, I disagree with you. It'll be easy for him.
He's also may have some people who were, like, very outspoken supporters of his who were running. Tulsi Gabbard's name is, like, permanently on the list of 36 people.
Yeah.
So there, I'm not saying he can't run against those people, but it's smart of him to start thinking of it now. P.S. They're all thinking of it now.
Yeah, duh.
But I mean, like, he has to. He will have to run a different and perhaps maybe even better campaign than he did the last time.
Yeah.
He will have the initial sort of probably lead. If you polled all 36 of these people right now, he would probably be ahead.
Yeah.
But you know, as we know with primaries, you know, Hillary Clinton was ahead by 70 points when they first started polling that race too. Yeah. So
well,
he's
also though,
if he's going to do it now, nah, he's got to start thinking of it. And he apparently is. So, but it was,
I mean,
that was a big,
I have a feeling he
week.
Won't run, but I have a feeling that the reason he's doing this is because he can marshal a kind of support and excitement that almost nobody else in that field can. Tulsi Gabbard is a supporter of hers, but she doesn't have the kind of support that
right.
he does
no, correct.
Off the bat.
No, right.
So figuring
she might
out,
be able to get it.
Figuring out how to direct his support is his responsibility regardless of whether
totally.
He runs.
Yeah.
So he has to kind of think about
totally.
Things.
Well, and, you know, Nina Turner was at this meeting of people.
Right.
Of his, you know, she will be of use to him in that respect.
Right.
If, you know, I mean, if he decides not to, it's going to be probably our revolution that is going to at least attempt to anoint someone probably,
right.
you know. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting anyway because, like, that's a 36 people. That's
I think
a fucking primary, guys.
There is no one else who is going to be able to hold the mantle of having been so purely
right.
ideal.
Progressivism,
like,
yeah. And
it's pure progressivism.
Yeah.
There's
totally.
No one else who's going to have that, who's going to be so untouchable
right.
scandal-wise.
Exactly. Yeah, if it's not him, he could go a long way to pick someone.
Yeah, I think should. Is Liz Warren talking about running? Because I feel
I think
like
she will. She's acting like she's going to.
I know she's been acting like it, but I feel like I thought that last time and then she didn't do it.
Yeah. I was
waiting for her to fucking run last time. I would have voted for her last time.
I just think that she didn't want to run against Hillary.
I feel like.
I think she just thought that was a bad look for her.
I mean, maybe. But she's also getting old. Like, they're all kind of old.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if Bernie Sanders ran. I would also be a little shocked if Liz Warren ran, and I think I would support her if she ran. I think that's who I would choose to support.
I actually think so, too, and I think that she's probably the closest thing that we have to a good answer, too, because
yeah,
I think that she,
agreed.
I think the left would be happy with her, and I think that she's now sort of, like, entrenched
deal.
Enough that,
yeah.
like, I think the party would, like, full-throatedly support her
yeah.
In a way that they would have never Sanders.
Last time, just because we had watched the campaign sort of shape up in this very, the country kind of turn into this populist fervor.
Yeah.
That's what I said last time. I was like, she's the perfect
yeah.
compromise candidate. She's in the party, but
right.
she's on the left.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it then.
No, they didn't.
So they're going to ruin everything again.
Yeah,
we're going to have
so.
Cory Booker as our candidate. And
no,
then we're
yeah,
going to have to
yeah,
talk
yeah.
about why we're supporting someone who takes so much money from the pharmaceutical industry.
Right. And we're going to have to explain to people again why we voted for Jill Stein.
Exactly. It's going to be a mess. Don't put us in this position again, you
right?
guys. Give us a candidate we can vote for.
Yeah, we didn't like it the last time.
No. I wasn't trying to be a dick. I just...
Your hand was forced.
My hand was forced.
Anyway, this is a great story. Maybe only
yeah.
outdone by
the
Hillary Clinton's State Department trying to figure out how to use the fax machine when
right.
we found all of her emails.
Yeah, this is on that scale.
Yeah, it's on that scale because this week, George Washington University's National Security Archive released a huge trove, more than 900 pages of Donald Rumsfeld memos from 2001,
yeah.
which were known back then as snowflakes.
Ironically enough.
Yeah. So we sort of always knew that Donald Trump was a bit of a poet, or Donald Trump. Well, he's a bit of a poet, too.
Nursery rhyme poet.
Yeah, there you go.
Donald
Rumsfeld, excuse me, was a poet because he had that famous quote that really sort of like shot him to the top
oh,
of
yes.
the charts, I guess, if you will, where he said, "We know there are some things we do not know, but there are also unknown unknowns, the ones we don't know we don't know." And that...
So true.
That is like some Sarah Palin style.
Yeah, that's...
like.
Poetry, that's slam poetry right there.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. So some enterprising genius put all of these memos together and basically wrote them out as verse, and they're great.
Yeah, Brent's, what
yeah.
if we just trade off reading them? We
yeah,
have a few of them
it.
Here, and I think you'll want to hear all of them.
Yeah, this one's called Fear of the Gift.
Mm-hmm.
If I am going to be giving gifts, I have to know what's in them. I can't just pass them out. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's next
yeah.
one. What am I? Please pull together a list of all the things I am automatically a member of because of my role as Secretary of Defense. For example, I understand I am now a member of the Homeland Security Council. Of course, I am also a member of the Cabinet and the National Security Council. Are there other things?
Are there other things? Who am I? What am I? Yeah. Here's this one. It's called Immodest Plan to Save the World. I have been waiting and waiting for a report on what we plan to do for the rest of the world. I have pushed, I have sent memos, and I have begged and pleaded. There must be some kind of interim report someone can give me. Thanks.
Yeah. Here's, I do not know these people. please tell people to stop using only their titles and start using their names in addition to the titles on correspondence. Here is a memo. I didn't know who these people are.
Okay, lastly, this is a good one. The things that could happen. We ought to think through what are the bad things that could happen and what are the good things that could happen that we need to be ready for. Need to be ready for the good things.
Yeah, the bad or the good.
That's right.
Ready for those good things.
We need to know the gifts that we're giving, and we need to know what the good things might be.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. There's more, by the way.
Oh, yeah. There's 900 pages. Treasure trove of them.
Yeah.
And they're all, Brent was like cackling to himself as he was pulling this story. I know.
Yeah.
They were all hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in final news.
Yeah.
Apparently.
The Guggenheim
is a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So Trump and Melania asked for a loan of a Van Gogh.
Yeah.
The landscape with snow.
Sure. Well, they have a fake one that they're claiming that they have in their residence.
Exactly.
Right now. Remember that story? Like, so 60 Minutes, they were like, hey, this is a Van Gogh or whoever it was.
Right.
That
and it was
like,
not a Van Gogh.
It's not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So they asked to borrow the real Van Gogh from the Guggenheim.
Yeah.
For the White House. And the museum said no and offered a consolation prize of a solid gold toilet called America.
Yeah.
It's an 18-carat, fully functioning solid gold toilet, which is an interactive piece of art that critics have described as pointed satire aimed at the excess of wealth in this country.
I mean,
it's fully functional, too, so you can use it.
He should, like, I'm assuming that he'll accept it. Like,
who else deserves a solid gold toilet?
I feel like he just already have one.
I was wondering. Maybe, I was like, another one?
Maybe not at the White House residence, because
no, that's true.
Probably not, but like, this is a man who has owned shit on a gold toilet before.
Obviously. Yeah. Yeah, he sat on a gold throne.
Yeah.
That's what the American term for throne.
That's right.
I mean, we mean toilet when we say throne.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what we say.
Yeah.
The Brits are talking about a chair for queens and shit.
Sure.
We're talking about toilets.
Yeah.
That's because we're rebellious kinds of people who don't have a king.
Yeah. Right.
Until now. But so, in any case, anyway, thank God.
America.
The Guggenheim gets it.
That's right.
And that's the news this week.
Yeah.
It's been wild.
Watch the State of the Union.
Yeah, it's on Tuesday. We'll be live tweeting it. And hopefully you will hear from you on Twitter.
Yeah. And watch Maxine Waters.
Yeah. First of all, if you do nothing else, that's the one to catch.
Yeah.
But the State of the Union, here's what you need to look out for that's interesting, because I feel like people don't always know why it's fun to watch the State of the Union. The handshakes.
The handshakes on the way out.
On the way out
the
and the way in.
And the way in. Yes.
You want, more so than hearing the speech, you want to watch Donald Trump shake hands with people on the way in and look at who dives away from him dives towards him.
Yes.
And then on the way out, you want to see who gives him a hearty handshake like you did a great job, man.
Good job.
And who doesn't make eye contact.
That's right.
There will be a lot of people that do the latter.
Yeah.
And then also, you want to find out who his invited guests were.
That's right.
When he points to the crowd and everyone claps, you want to find out who they're clapping.
Yeah.
Because it says a lot about your administration.
Yeah, and you also, you want to see all of the weird standing ovations.
Yes. Yeah. There's usually, in a normal presidency, there will be a 50% standing ovation after every word, basically.
That's right.
You know, Obama would say one sentence, and then the entire Democratic caucus would stand and applause.
That's right.
Now, it was awkward with Trump last time, because it was right after the election, and the Republicans felt compelled to do that to show that they were a unified front, but also confused because they hated him.
Right.
So this is going to be an even more interesting time.
Yes.
If they get too excited about their applause, you'll know they feel threatened. If they are kind of withholding applause, you'll know they feel threatened.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they do, they'll feel threatened. But I'm curious to find out if there are any times that the Democrats are given an olive branch on a line they can applause for.
Yeah.
Because presidents specifically put things into the speech that both sides will have to applaud for to see if they can make
it
happen.
To see if they do it. Yeah, exactly.
So it's mostly about watching the audience.
Yeah.
The speech itself will be bullshit.
Right.
Don't let that dissuade you from watching.
No.
And also, let's find out what everyone's wearing.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing I like better than pantsuit discussion and hats.
That's right, hats.
The Democratic ladies really bring the hat game.
That's right.
And while I'm not normally trying to focus on what women are wearing at an important event like that, I am trying to figure out something besides men in suits to look at.
The State of the Union address is
it's all pageantry.
Ultimately, I was going to say, it's just a huge spectacle.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's look at the hats.
Yeah, there's no content.
Okay about it.
There's no content there. Yeah. So in any case, but definitely watch. It's always fun to watch once you know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you about it next week. Bye.
That's it.
Bye.